I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thanks once again for rolling. My guest today is Wendy Young. Wendy is a photographer, filmmaker, and documentarian working out of Cerrillos, New Mexico. I've asked her to join me today to talk about her photography exhibit called A Long and Slow Surrender. It's an arresting collection focused on Confederate monuments and ideology across contemporary southeastern United States. It's showing now through December 7th in Boone, North Carolina. You can see many of the photos in the collection at wendyyoung.net/work. Wendy, WendyYoung.net. Type it in. Follow along if you like. Wendy, thank you so much for joining me, and congratulations on your win of Best Documentary at the Madrid Film Festival this year. That's Divided Allegiance.
Divided Allegiance, Untangling the Flag and the Cross.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And I want to get to how these projects must have birthed the other.
Yes. A Long and Slow Surrender definitely birthed Divided Allegiance, because you can't really look at our political situation and the Confederacy without understanding that the flag and the cross are incredibly tangled.
There's so much to unpack here. So much to unpack here. And I know that I'm going to want to have you back after your journey to the... So let's just back up. Okay. All the way up. Tell me about A Long and Slow Surrender and where it's showing and why.
So in 2017, I had a friend who said to me, all those Confederate monuments got to come down right now. And I was like, ain't no damn Yankee going to tell me what to do with my statues.
And as a white friend or a black friend?
It was
friend?
A white friend.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I thought about it and I went, why did I have that reaction? And it really is born out of being born in the South and raised in the South and steeped in Southernness. And I love the South. Don't get me wrong. Love the food. Love most of the people. And so I decided to set out and see what's the real story about these monuments. I mean, I grew up with them. There was one right at the edge of the parking lot of my church.
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, it's gone now.
Really?
That one's down. Yeah. And so, I mean, I read the inscriptions, but it never really meant anything to me other than, oh, this is war. Okay. And then you learn about the Civil War. I took AP History, where we were supposed to be studying source documents. And we really never did. I never read the letters of secession until I started this project in 2017. I doubt many of our listeners have read the letters of secession. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. So, and I also decided to set out and see how these monuments affect their communities. Like, what's going on around the monuments? Because everyday life happens around them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. homecoming parades and funerals, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all this stuff. And so it was a 7-year journey of trying to unlearn what I had been taught, which is the Lost Cause myth, of course, that the South fought the war only to protect their state's rights. And that is true, mm-hmm. but it's an incomplete sentence. Mm-hmm. The complete sentence is they fought to preserve their state's rights to own other humans. Mm-hmm. That's the whole sentence. And these monuments only represent the first part of that sentence. They don't represent the rest of it.
So one of my questions mm-hmm. is why? Like, where's the shame and white supremacy? It's a thing, but like, why hide behind the myth of the Lost Cause? Why not just say, hey, we're hanging on to white supremacy? Love it or leave it.
I mean,
they say both at the same time.
I know. It's crazy. It's like you get whiplash from listening to some of the stuff. And
I'm not racist, but I'm racist.
Yeah, I'm not racist, but I want to preserve this history that isn't the whole history. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, the monuments do represent history. I'm not going to argue that point. However, they do not tell the whole historic story.
Yes, there's the history conversation, and what about mm-hmm. the conversation of now? So
right.
So I understand wanting to preserve mm-hmm. history. We need to. I think both sides want that. That's what the truth part about truth and reconciliation is mm-hmm. about. How does this filter through the poor whites today in these communities, as far as do most of the people that you met think that they are white supremacists, and do they want to bring back the domination and subjugation of other human beings?
That's a really good question that I haven't heard that question. I'm glad you asked me though. Yes, they definitely deny being white supremacists. Like, I'm not in the Klan. I'm not this. I'm not that. But I've never asked them, like, where do you fall on bringing back slavery? I mean, it's like, it's kind of like, I didn't think to ask it because it's such a weird, like, no one wants to bring back slavery.
Right.
But that's not a true statement either, mm-hmm. what I just said.
Right.
Because there are some people that would love to bring back slavery.
Right, because you're talking about the new groups that are coming up with the...
Well, just oligarchs and... I mean,
the Patriot Front and
Patriot Front. Don't get me started.
Yeah. Well, you're here to be started. I'm revving you up, right? Okay. So let's just go back to your story, though. You traveled for 7 years across.
Except for 2020. Yes.
Except for 2020. Yeah.
Which was when all these monuments were coming down and I couldn't go. It was so frustrating.
On your website, wendyyoung.net. Mm-hmm. You talk about how many Confederate monuments there were historically since the Civil War, how many came down right after the Civil War. And I'm going to do a time jump here and say it looked like the bulk of them came down in 2020.
That's correct. It was after George Floyd.
Right. Yeah. And right before that, another chunk had come down after the Unite the Right rally.
Yes.
So what do you think is responsible for that uptick in removals?
Well, I think people are finally, I mean, my personal journey shows me that people are finally starting to listen to people of color. Not everybody is listening, mm-hmm. that is for sure. But I think that, like, I'm a 61-year-old white woman. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm more tuned in than most people my age. But I hear people saying things now that I was saying 7 or 8 years ago. So I think that things that have happened in public are really helping to shine the light for people like me that don't really have the experience of being oppressed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you grew up in the shadow of all this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you grew up in Pensacola, Florida.
Mm-hmm. I was born in Jackson, Mississippi.
Okay.
But that is not why my son is named Jackson.
No, you named him after Stonewall Jackson.
No. God, no. It's on my Yankee dad's side of the family. No, yeah.
But tell me more about that. I'm really interested in your personal reconciliation process. I was looking at the stairs, that monument in Pensacola.
Oh, yeah, because it has all the names of the states.
Yes.
That seceded on the steps. Yeah. And I don't even know if the steps are still there. I haven't been back to Pensacola in a very long time. They got to change their governor before I go back.
But I'd like to talk a little bit about your upbringing and the flag and the cross.
Yeah.
And the piece is captioned Confederate Steps, Pensacola, Florida, mm-hmm. 2017. This monument is one that I have personal connection with. These steps lead from the Lee Park to the parking lot of my hometown church in Pensacola, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
This is where my friends and I would hide out when we skipped church activities on Wednesday nights.
That's correct.
At First Baptist Church.
Yeah. Shout out to Sarah and Donna.
I love skipping church. They need to stop putting parks across the street.
That's right. Oh, yeah. No, yeah, that one is, I mean, it's really interesting, too, because it's in the middle of the main drag through Pensacola. So the street goes around it on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called Lee Park. And, you know, it's right there in the center of town, which most of these are in the center of town. I could put a town in my GPS, and it would basically drive me within 100 feet of the monument.
Jeez.
Because that's the center of town. And they're almost always in front of courthouses. this one's in the middle of the street. There's another one in Lake Village, Arkansas, that's in the middle of the street too. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty interesting one. I had to photograph that one three times before I got a shot that was worth keeping.
Because of the traffic?
Yeah. And it was just like I saw it in a different way the third time I went. Mm-hmm. These monuments are really boring to photograph because this is the same guy. I'm not really photographing too many that were dedicated to specific Confederate people. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it's just the generic to the Confederate dead, which means that they could easily be located in a cemetery instead of in front of governmental buildings, public spaces. And oddly enough, every time I presented that idea to either side, they would go, oh, yeah, we could do that. So to me, it seems that there is a compromise. There is an answer to this problem, except for in Florence, Alabama.
I was going to say, looking through my papers.
Except for Florence, Alabama.
Florence, Alabama. Talk about what happened there.
Florence, Alabama is in the north part of Alabama. Beautiful little city. My pawpaw was from there. And it's right just a little bit north of Muscle Shoals. So that's where all the groovy sounds came from in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So it's kind of got a cool vibe there. And there's a group there called Project Say Something. And they are doing the Lord's work. Camille Gladstone Bennett is in charge of that group. And she's just so cool. And what they're trying to do, well, originally they're trying to get the monument moved. Okay, then Kay Ivey, the governor of Alabama, said, can't do that. Any monument older than 40 years cannot be moved, changed, or added to in any way, shape, or form without a $25,000 fine to the city that does those things.
And didn't he make up that, propose that law like recent?
Oh, yeah. It's been within the last 4 or 5 years. Right. Yeah. So
as they were trying to get it taken down,
she definitely
created new legislation to say, sorry, we can't do that without a $25,000.
Yeah. So guess what Project Say Something did?
Uh-huh.
These people.
Uh-huh.
They raised $25,000 to pay the fine.
Uh-huh.
They poured a slab. They paid to pour a slab in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And the city council still said, nah, we're not moving it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they came back and said, well, how about this? How about we just put up a little plaque that talks about the egregious language that was in the dedication speech that was read over this monument?
Mm-hmm.
Which if you spend any time reading these dedication speeches, it's like, wow, they were saying it right out loud. They were saying the quiet parts out loud, even back then. They were saying, oh, yeah, the white race is far superior to the black race. And so we need to have this to remind our people that they're better than those people.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very American.
or it's human. Entirely American.
Yeah, exactly. It can go either way.
Early day American.
No, it's true.
But and that's why I'm going to let you finish about the plaque.
So they wanted to put this plaque up. And I think that they had like 2/3 of the council willing to vote. And then they backed out at the last minute and didn't vote to put up the plaque.
Mm-hmm.
So now Project Say Something is putting billboards up with the faces of the city councilors.
Wow. Wow.
And saying, these people lied to us.
Yeah.
I mean, they have the $25,000, right? That they didn't spend to move the monument. And you can see in my photograph of that particular monument, the Patriot Front sticker on the light pole in front of it. And Patriot Front is a hate group. They don't believe that people of color or women have anything to contribute to society, except for women have
uterus.
The vessel.
Yeah, right. I'm like, what do we have?
That's what we got. And so that is a group that I have now seen their presence around two different monuments, one in Texas and one in Florence.
Where's the one in Texas?
It's in Cleburne, Texas. And it is of General Patrick Cleburne, who was a general from Tennessee, but his Texas soldiers loved him so much. Oh, guess when that monument was erected? Mm. 2015.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the oldest monument that I photographed is in Natchez, Mississippi, and that one was erected in 1895.
Mm-hmm.
The rest were erected post-Reconstruction and during the Civil Rights Movement.
Exactly. And that's where we're going to get into that. Because while we are on Florence, Alabama and the Patriot Front, and we're talking about the egregious language, I want to sort of close this part of the conversation before we move into the symbolism, the actual symbolism of Confederate iconography, and maybe no, they don't want slavery, but they definitely want to intimidate people. So we're gonna move on over there. But the so the language that the Project Say Something wanted to address with the plaque.
You'll have to remind me because I don't have it memorized.
No, I have it for you here, and I don't know if it's better if you read it.
Or, I'll read it.
Yeah, you read it. But let people soak it in, because the truth of the matter is that a lot of people don't have this
information.
They're saying it's pride and not prejudice, and it's like, no.
This is not very
pride. I've known plenty of
people. I wouldn't be proud of this if I heard it at a speech. I would be appalled. I mean, I don't know.
That's what makes you different. That's why you did this exhibition.
So. Also, I want to point out that where I come from, I mean, the Baptist Church, First Baptist Church, Pensacola, Southern Baptist Convention, I believe when you speak words over something, that's a prayer or an incantation playing D&D or whatever. You know? Okay. So the fact that they spoke these words at a ceremony, I don't know where to file that. Because it's first.
And then I'm going to just say afterwards, I will read bits of the mission statement of the Patriot Front.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right.
It's a reading club. 120, well, the Indicab Book Club. We have it at 9 most Saturdays.
Nice. All right. So in this, our Southland flows the purest Anglo-Saxon blood that pulses in any human veins. Wow. Isolation, a lack of immigration, fastidious taste, and public opinion all have conspired to produce this result. In the northern states, public opinion leans in the opposite direction. Fellow citizens, we are all citizens of the same great country, worshiping the same God, sharing the same bright heritage of honor, loving and following the same bright starry, I think that was supposed to be flag, left out the L, whithersoever it may lead us in that country's cause. But binding and eternal as our union is and forever shall be between our countrymen of the North and our countrymen of the South, there is drawn a line which must separate us in our beliefs and sentiments until it shall fade away in the light of truth and experience. Their civilization differs from ours in one essential that creates an impassable barrier. Here it comes. They look upon the Negro as a white man with colored skin and believe education to be the one thing needful. We of the South know better. No other people know him so well or love him so well. But nowhere here is he accorded social equality. When the highest representative of Northern civilization invites the highest representative of Negro civilization to sit at his table as his social equal, he digs a gulf between us too wide and deep for us to go to them or for them to come to us. This gets a little weird because he's talking about some weird Bible stuff.
Read it.
Okay.
Read it. Okay. Weird Bible stuff. We love it.
I don't even understand.
Untangle the flag and the crosswind. That's weird out. To do. Okay.
Into the form of man, God breathed the breath of eternal life, and he became a living soul. So separate from the man-like forms around them, that when the children of Adam, sons of God by virtue of that miraculous inspiration, saw that the daughters of men were fair and married them, he sent a deluge that destroyed the mongrel race.
Did he, though?
Well, and okay, I'm not finished.
Because we're mongrel still here. I mean, if I'm that mongrel,
these people.
Am I that mongrel?
We are the sons of God. Let no second deluge be brought upon the world on our account. United daughters of the Confederacy, into your fair hands, your Creator has placed the power to prevent this degradation. Let no man, be he as learned as Socrates or as rich as Croesus, cross your threshold if he has bartered away this right. To you, fair daughters of the Confederacy, we return our thanks for what you have done and are doing for us and for the South.
With now, the babies.
This is the weird thing. That the plaque that they wanted to put up, the only part that they were going to quote was this mongrel race part.
Whew.
They weren't even going to address that first sentence. In this, our Southland flows the purest Anglo-Saxon blood that pulses in any human veins.
Yeah.
Wow.
It reminds me of all the negotiations. I mean, all the peace talks that we're listening to right now.
Yes.
All this ceasefire stuff. You have to cut lines and make compromise, but the other side doesn't want to compromise often.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, the people that I talk to about Confederate monuments, I'm not sure they even know that this stuff exists. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that they live in this weird vacuum of, I don't need to know the history of these monuments because they just represent history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But only one side of the history. And, you know, usually people say, oh, well, the winners write the history. Not in this case. Mm-hmm. The losers wrote the history and then rewrote it.
Yeah. Well, and it's just so wild because that's the part where I was getting to is if you're going to be a white supremacist,
just own it.
Be proud. I mean, you can't sit here and tell pieces of your story. And you can. And this is where I so appreciate you being on this show as a white person from this from your vantage point, because you're decolonizing your own mind and life. This is part of this journey for you. Mm-hmm. It's centered in the journey to wake yourself up.
Absolutely.
You know, and so the way that the advantage of telling part of the story is they get to be insidious and perpetuate this over generations and hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
I love the part, and I've met people in real time that are like, you know, no other people know him so well or love him so well, but nowhere here is he accorded social equality. I love my Negro. I'm just going to say Negro, but you know, Nigga Jim, we love him. The magical Negro can come and save my bacon any day.
But only this far.
But you will never mm-hmm. be equal to me. So then we come and we fast forward 120 years. Okay.
Uh-oh, where are we going now?
Because this was
that. You know more about my work right now than I do.
It was last night. I'm like totally, I crammed before the test. Ask me at lunch and I won't remember anything. But this will be archived on In the Cab Radio at Mixcloud and on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
Within the week, I'll have links out. So that excerpt for the dedication of the Eternal Vigil was in 1903.
Yeah. So that's post-Reconstruction.
And then I have here on the Patriot front, the photo that you have.
Yeah, with
the
sticker.
General Cleburne.
Oh, that's a different one. That's mm-hmm. that's Cleburne. That's in Texas. That's okay. The one in Texas.
Cleburne, Texas.
Yeah. It's
Cleburne, Texas. 2023. Was when you took this picture. So you quote the mission statement uh-huh. from the Patriot Front, their website.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Hold on, y'all.
I'm trying really hard not to use a messed up accent or make fun of these people. Okay. Because it's not funny, but
you know,
we have Sagittarius. It's trauma. You have to make it funny.
That's right.
All right. When our pre-Columbian forefathers left their European homes, they found a common cause and a common identity as Americans. Timeline, but anyway. From the varied nations and cultures of Europe, a new nation was forged in the fames of conquest. To be an American is to be a descendant of conquerors, pioneers, visionaries, and explorers. This unique identity was given to us by our ancestors, and this national spirit remains firmly rooted in our blood. Our mission is a hard reset on the nation we see today, a return to the traditions and virtues of our forefathers. America needs a generation of brave men to fearlessly rise to face all threats to their collective interests. A generation steeled in their effort to realize their grand vision of a new nation. This gathering of the faithful, the true inheritors of America, will urge our people onward.
Hey, yeah, that was like written in 2023, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we have that. And I just want to say, aside from the history lesson that's needed on that first sentence, I just love how the supremacists, they wrote down in the Mississippi one?
State letter.
Yeah, here we go.
It's the more succinct one, yeah.
I love it, though. These products are peculiar to the climate, virgin on tropical regions, and by an imperious law of nature, none but the black race can bear exposure to the tropical sun.
We're so fair. We don't want to get a sunburn.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that one. So that was the one that like really kind of sealed it for me when I read that.
Yeah.
And like I was born in Mississippi, spent the first 5 years of my life there. Mississippi's got work to do.
How did that tropical climate handle for you?
I was fine. I was fine. Yeah. It didn't bother me at all. And I had to toil. Yeah. We had a quarter acre garden and we had 2 acres and my dad always planted like it was a quarter of an acre. We had beans and greens and corn and all this stuff. That was my chore.
Yeah.
But I survived it.
You did, but and before I can already hear people got smoke coming out their ears because you know. But you do acknowledge in your work the hard work and lifestyle that was imposed on people that is chattel slavery.
Yeah,
you know, I mean we're you know gardening versus
what, oh gardening you know. Is not the same thing.
Yeah, I just want you to say that for Cran on the show because if we let that hang,
I'm
like
just
that.
Saying that I survived the tropical sun just fine.
Little bit of
I think yeah. that my ancestors could have toiled in the field also.
Yeah, yeah.
Without enslaving people.
No, but you were talking about in this work the lash, the what you began to understand was the experience of Black people back then. We weren't even considered people according Mm-mm. to a lot of this
no.
documentation.
It's crazy.
So let's talk about the symbolism, as most of these monuments were erected post-Reconstruction. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I've understood, the symbolism behind the weaponization of the Confederate flag was really thrown into full force during the Black Civil Rights Movement.
Yes.
In the 1950s.
Yes.
In the South.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I never had an inclination to... I don't think I ever had anything. I mean, I watched Dukes of Hazzard.
Hmm.
They had the General mm-hmm. Lee and the flag on the hood, mm-hmm. but I never really.
Just a oh, couple no, my, good my old
brother,
boys.
Yeah, my brother had a car. I don't even know what kind of car it was. It's like I don't know. It's not a Matchbox car, but a little bigger than that. And I did save that, and I have it in my studio, and it does have a Confederate flag on the hood of the car. That's kind of like my weird collection of of weird things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I've never really owned anything with a Confederate flag on it. Even before I was conscious that it was a bad thing, mm-hmm. I don't know. It just didn't seem.
Is it a bad thing? What's your synopsis?
For me, it is. For me, it is not a bad symbol. That's kind of a weird. It's a symbol that has been used to foment hate,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not down with that at all. Like. We should be promoting love and peace and kindness and understanding and I don't know, all the good words.
So I'd like to go back all the way to the beginning of the show.
Okay.
And talk about the love of the South.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I've been reconciling with in my
sure.
life.
Sure.
I'm from Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
which is the South. It's not as South to South.
Oh, no, you're damn Yankee according to where I grew up.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm a damn Yankee according to myself. I went and lived in Atlanta for a summer. I was like, oh, hell no. You don't have to talk to me like that. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. However, but it's still south of the Mason-Dixon line. It's still mm-hmm. Right there smack between Maryland and Virginia and West Virginia and all of that.
Yep.
Our customs are similar. Our weather is similar.
You got the humidity. You definitely got the humidity. Yep.
And most of our ancestors and immediate relatives mingled up and down the coast.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to be afraid of the South. I refuse to
Oh, thank you.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
You know, this land is all of our land. It is not really in my experience of driving across country, I find that most people are just good people.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's true. Even the guy that I interviewed, Mike Taylor, who's the vice president of the Confederate Riders of America, which is a motorcycle club.
Right, let's talk.
You know, I was supposed to meet him in a public place. I found him on Facebook. That's a long story. And
this is a stranger that you met on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I met my husband on AOL.
Okay.
In a chat room. So what can I say? Yeah. So Mike agreed for me to interview him and talk to him. And at that point, I really didn't know what I was doing either. So I kind of feel like I was very naive in the beginning of this journey. And I just kind of wanted to hear what he had to say. And of course, he gave the whole, you know, heritage, not hate. You know, I have a Black friend and that kind of thing. And we couldn't meet in public because he had two teenage girls. Not okay, that sounds really bad. Sorry. Yeah. He had his daughter and a friend, and they wouldn't get out of bed. And so he's like, I can't leave them here alone. So can you come to my house and we'll talk? And so he cooked breakfast for me, and we hung out, and he has this cute little laugh, and he's a funny guy. And like, if we weren't talking about this stuff, I probably would have like really enjoyed hanging out with him. I don't know that I can hang out with him anymore.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Because I feel so strongly about what I learned that I would just want to change his mind. And you can't change people's minds. They have to do that work on their own.
Isn't it exhausting?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's more exhausting for y'all than it is for us.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's my job to spread this word and talk about it, mm-hmm. and say, look, the melanin in my skin does not matter.
Mm-hmm.
The melanin in your skin doesn't matter. It's like who we are as humans.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand where we got so off track. And then going back to what you were talking about, the, you know, we love our slaves, but we really don't respect them. I don't know how you can say that and still feel like you're a, quote, good Christian.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. There's music that we yes. wanted to play, and I want to keep going.
Well, I tell you what, all right. So I started this project in 2017.
Yes, I was going to bring it back to that.
And I needed to find a title for this project, and I was vacuuming one day and listening to music, you know, and Kate Campbell, who I call Kate my Southern muse, because she is the soundtrack of my travels. She and Will Kimbrough and a bunch of other people, but they've come to be friends also. And so I was listening to Look Away by Kate Campbell and Walt Aldridge, and this line jumped out at me while I was vacuuming. It's a long and slow surrender retreating from the past. And that's what we're in. We're in this long and slow surrender, and it is slow.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been a long time coming.
Mm.
So, you know, her lyrics are very poignant to me. And the song will just kind of take you to the South.
Let's talk about that song.
Okay. So that's the song I got the title for the work from.
Mm-hmm.
A Long and Slow Surrender. And like I said before, Kate's really kind of a musical muse for me. We're the same age. We had the same Baptist upbringing. So I've actually hung out with her a couple of times over the years, and we had her at our house concert series, I think maybe three times. I think it's at least two. That song has been with me for a long time. I believe she wrote it in the 90s at some point, she and Walt Aldridge. And we were talking while it was playing about how it's a great song,
mm-hmm.
but it can seem a little bit naive from the white perspective in that I never saw an angry mob. That doesn't mean they didn't exist. I know Kate knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. but I think it's interesting how the more I learned about the history of the Civil War, this song kind of became a little bit more of a naive song.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the right word for me, is a little bit naive, which I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why I kind of identified with it. The line, never dreaming other saw way of life in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember watching the news, and it was during desegregation and busing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching the news. I mean, I always had this feeling that Northerners looked down on Southerners.
Right.
And then I saw on the news that, I think it was in Michigan, that they were protesting busing also. And I was like, well, they're just as racist as we are.
Mm-hmm,
and so being, you know, kind of pigeonholed as the region of racism.
Right.
it kind of upset me when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But then I grew up to realize, well, yeah, we kind of are. Like, mm-hmm. you know, accept who you are and then try it. If it's not the right way to be in the world, change it.
Mm-hmm. You have another selection that you
So this kind of, I look at A Long and Slow Surrender as the beginning of my journey.
Yes.
And then Amy Ray's Didn't Know a Damn Thing is definitely where I'm at right now. She's got a little more anger. And I don't think this is an angry song, but yeah. And also, I just want to point out that the Indigo Girls have been working very closely with Project Say Something in Florence, Alabama.
Wow.
Yeah. So I kind of admire the way they do their activism.
Mm-hmm. So. Y'all hear that? These organizations are out here working.
Project Say Something, if you want to give some money, mm-hmm. they have a website. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that, but it's a...
Probably not like exactly like that, but...
Okay. Go check out Project Say Something on the internet. They have a great Facebook page, too.
Actually, you can do whatever you want.
I just can't. Okay, all right.
So that's something that we learned at the radio conference, just for
oh,
sure.
Really?
My
okay.
guest says something.
It's not
I can't turn the mic off and choke you out.
Okay.
No, I can't find you. But I should know better. So
that's okay. You didn't know I was going to say that.
I love that you did, though. Everyone, please get involved with these organizations in one way or another, just to learn a bit more.
Absolutely.
This is, again, not old history. This is
just
the present
going on.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now. And don't act like you didn't know a damn thing. Let's talk about that song.
So that song, to me, is kind of where I'm at right now. And looking back over my life, and I really didn't know a damn thing because I wasn't taught the actual history. That line, you know, gave 3 days a week to the sanctuary and 5 days a week to the county curriculum. Yeah, that was my life. I was in church 3 days a week, except for when I was skipping and hanging out by the Confederate monument. And it's like, Amy is really pointing a finger at the institutions that are responsible for us being kind of in this position. The education system, our churches, our churches aren't doing a whole lot to educate people about our actual history. Mm-hmm. And they're a big part of the problem.
Yes. I'd like to close the show the interview when we get there with Side by Side by Wilder Atkins, which was another song.
Yeah, that's a sweet little song that kind of is where like we need to be.
Yes. And he references Dr. King's work.
Absolutely.
Which has been a big part of this show for the past 6 months or so. When Amy was talking about the kid on the bus sitting next to her. So how integrated was your growing up?
My elementary school was not integrated at all. My middle school was very integrated, and my high school too. Yeah, and then my grandfather owned a store in a black part of town, Brownsville, mm-hmm. in Pensacola. So I grew up around black people my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
My mom
mm-hmm.
was a public school teacher. As a matter of fact, in Mississippi, when we lived there, I'm trying to remember the name of the little town. I can't remember it. Oh, Live Oak. Live Oak, Mississippi. Mm. She taught a bunch of mulattoes. Mm. I don't know if that's the right word to say, but that's what they were. I'm sorry. These are people of color that have really struggled.
I mean, some
struggled.
People are cool with it as a whole identity, right?
And so I was around many different races my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what made it harder to understand for me is like, but this is our friend. Like, why is this societal thing happening that others people?
Well, and that's where, you know, cause as you're talking about this, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking at the same time about just that little aside about the term mulatto
mm-hmm.
and how if race wasn't such an abusive construct, a way to categorize people,
right.
wouldn't even have a use for words like that.
Right.
And even though it is, I believe there's like people who are of mixed heritage mm-hmm. from a certain area identify as mulattoes. And why? Because somebody pointed at them and said, "You bunch of mulattoes
right.
one day." I don't know. I mean, I'm sure
they
know they did. Well, it's a constructed blood quantum thing.
Okay. Oh, so it's that weird guy that did all the blood stuff.
Yes, it's the weird guy who did all the blood stuff. Y'all go and look at 1619.
Yeah.
They break it down in the category of race, and that it was a person who worked for the United States government. He might have had doctor in front of his name. He made a list of all the different, I guess, ethnic groups and renamed them according to if they were 1/8, 1/16, 1/2 white. And then it became, this is the fun thing later, especially around Jim Crow.
Fun with genetics.
Is that if they knew that that even if you didn't show melanin in your skin, then you could still have black blood in you.
Right.
So then it became like, you're hanging out with too many black people, you must be black. And so a lot of white people got categorized as black for being in the jazz clubs and stuff. It's really deep how it can go, the othering process.
But why don't you just go to the jazz club and enjoy it instead of sitting back and judging? I don't understand that. Like, just go enjoy life. Mm-hmm. Why is that so hard for people?
We have 5 minutes left in an hour. I got some real controversial paperwork on that. And it's there are some theories around melanin and genetics and how maybe some people are afraid of being replaced or bred out, so to speak, because melanin is a dominant characteristic. And so if there's too much race mixing, white people will disappear. And so there's some...
How does that affect me?
How does it affect you? Well, we'll go back to who was it talking about them white babies?
Yeah.
Come on now.
I know.
That's why they're killing sympathizers as well, you know? And I have to say that thank goodness for all the work that our ancestors have done and that we are doing to make it so that you and I can sit in a room together and have this conversation on the radio, you know.
It's crazy.
It's a beautiful thing. How can people locally see your work?
Oh, well, I'm hoping to this isn't firm, but I have to give a talk in Boone, North Carolina on November 7th, and I kind of want to do a practice talk here.
Mm-hmm.
So if I do it, it'll be on a Sunday afternoon at the State Park building in Cerrillos.
Oh, nice.
It can't be next weekend. It's obviously not this weekend. So it's going to be one of the last two weekends before it'll have to be that last weekend in before November 2nd, because Jackson and I are leaving on November 2nd to drive to Boone.
Uh-huh.
And then Corey's going to fly out. Mm-hmm. I have my two kids with me.
Yeah.
So if I do that, I'll post it on my Facebook page and, you know, get the word out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but I want to do a little practice run. So
great. And your Facebook page is?
It's just Wendy Young. I'm very easy to find online.
Yeah. And is there a signifier? You know, sometimes it could be Wendy Young, the stripper out of.
No, I'm pretty. It's me. You'll know it's me.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I have my cover image is a photograph I took that says "Quit starving and bombing people."
Okay. Right on. So look for that. Can people see the movie, the film?
Divided Allegiance. That's my little trailer. I want it to be a longer. Like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
This is really at 5 minutes right now. Dealing with Christian nationalism, which was born out of this work. I really wanted to do a body of work about patriotism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that that patriotism has been infected with white Christian nationalism.
Yes.
And I'm going to try to fix that.
You're going to try to fix
that? I'm going to try to fix it.
Awesome. Awesome.
In my own little way.
Sign me up. I would love to fix that too.
I just want to shine a light on it. And I want to, it's kind of a personal thing too for me. Like, I don't want my faith weaponized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stop it.
Yes.
Stop it.
Yes.
So it's just as much to protect my faith as it is to protect our government.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put those two things in bed together. It never has worked and it won't.
You mean they can't be side by side?
Oh, what a great segue.
Let's talk about this song.
Okay. Yeah, that's just like a really, to me, that's where we should be right now. That's like kind of where I feel like I'm leading into my journey, this song really kind of shows where I feel we should be already. And mm-hmm. I thought we were.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I thought, oh, we solved racism.
Mm-hmm. I thought that too.
Yeah.
And
look, I go to school with black people. We're fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I went to the University of Southern Mississippi in 1981. Mm-hmm. Segregated dorms.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Was that
1981.
College, was that college policy? Or was it
Well,
chosen?
They didn't say it
Unspoken.
Was. But there were no black girls in my dorm.
Mm-hmm.
And my roommate and I had this weird job one year where we, or one semester where we had to, I'm showing my age here.
I was going to ask you to show your age actually okay. so that people had
okay.
a frame.
Yeah, I'm 61. And I don't know if you remember, but dial phones.
Oh, yeah.
They had a little sticker in the middle with the phone number on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so my roommate and I had a job of peeling off the old stickers and putting a new sticker on because we were changing the phone system. So we had a master key to all the girls' dorms on campus. And we would go in and change the, you know, we had to announce, we had to knock, we had all that mm-hmm. stuff. And that was the first time I saw Prince.
Prince was in the dorms?
Not in reality, but every girl had that poster of Prince. In, I guess he's in the shower.
Oh, yeah.
In his Speedo.
Yeah. He's like mostly naked. It's a
oh, yeah. It's just a Speedo.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And so my roommate and I were like, well, who's that guy on all the girls' dorm walls? And that's where I learned about Prince.
Really?
Yeah. From the black girls' dorms.
Wow.
Who knew?
Did you go get a Prince album after that?
No, but... But I did go see Purple Rain when it came out.
Nice.
I was like, oh, that's that guy from the dorms. Yeah.
I love
so,
that.
So, yeah. So, we didn't solve racism. It's a spoiler alert.
But here we are, you know, just walking that side by side.
Yep.
You know, trying to turn this darkness
and
into
light. You
know
what? It's really not that hard, turns out, to walk side by side.
Can we talk a little bit about... Christian values and how these projects are working together for you right now?
Well, like I said, the Divided Allegiance came out of Long and Slow Surrender just because of what I was learning. And I realized that even my Christian upbringing doesn't address any of this, and it should.
Mm-hmm.
And until we have reconciliation on a lot of things, not necessarily just race, but power, labor, mm-hmm. all those things. And I currently go to church, and my church is a little different in that it's non-denominational. We don't pass the plate. Yeah, there's a box at the back where you can put some money if you want it. And we try to support our local community first before we start supporting things, you know, outside of our community.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I think that the churches need to put their money where their mouth is mm-hmm. and support their communities.
Yes. Dr. King in A Knock at Midnight, which we read during my book club this mm-hmm. last time, one, I think it was the third or fourth sermon in there was Guidelines for a Constructive Church.
Yeah.
And he was basically addressing what you're saying.
Yeah.
That the church is... not a social club. I would say not just. I think he was a little remiss.
They do help build
that.
Community. I would give them that.
It's what people only had mm-hmm. for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So the church did become a social club. However, he was just really talking about the responsibility and role.
Right. But you can have fun and support your community at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Turns out that's not that hard either.
Yes. And he talked a lot about status. I found it interesting that you said y'all don't pass a plate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's great that they don't do that because
yeah.
Dr. King would say, you know, we don't need to brag about our titles when we're going to church. We have this many doctors that go here. We this many lawyers. We
yeah.
have this many businessmen. And our church is the richest, most prestigious church.
Which that's the church I grew up in Pensacola,
mm-hmm.
Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It was the church that all the doctors and lawyers went to. And I wasn't a cool kid. I know that's hard to believe. Just kidding. But you know what? I made lifetime friends there. I shouted out to my friends Sarah and Donna.
Uh-huh.
And I just talked to Donna. Actually, she prefers to be called DM. But I talked to Donna the other day. And Sarah, I stayed with Sarah in her cabin when my show opened in Boone. Like
mm-hmm.
lifelong friends because mm-hmm. we were kind of outcasts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we weren't really the cool kids.
Was your church integrated?
Oh, no.
That's another thing that Dr. King was very famous for saying, is that Sunday morning is the most segregated
exactly.
hour.
Exactly. I don't know what the population looks like now, honestly, but back when I was going there, that, I mean, that's been a long time, almost 30 years.
Yeah.
I have no idea if they've progressed past that or not.
So what do you think tied the cross and the flag together?
Power. It's all about power. That's in control. Yeah, it's mammon. I don't know if you've heard that term. It's it's the mixture of money and power. And it's really what Jesus came to battle is that he did not flip tables.
Yes.
In the Roman Senate.
Right.
Where did he flip the tables?
That's right.
In the church.
I love that. I love that when in our pre-production meeting, you're like, you know, Jesus came to overturn religion to save his religion.
Yes. And he came, he's a liberator of the oppressed, not a mascot for the powerful. And that, I actually have a sweatshirt that says that.
Wow.
Yeah. And I believe that 100% wholeheartedly. If Jesus wanted everybody to be Christians, he would have done that. And he did everything to avoid that. You know, when he was tempted by Satan, you could own all this. All you have to do is worship me and you can have all this. He could have done that. He could have ruled the world. And I realize that we're talking about some supernatural stuff here that is like, I am a believer.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to force everybody around me to be a believer.
Yeah.
You know?
Tell me a little bit about your belief and how that's changed from childhood to now.
Well, I think we talked about how I kind of left the church when I moved to New Mexico. I didn't try to find a home church here when I moved here because I was kind of done with it. I was like, whatever. You know, it was cool. But now I'm on to something else. Let me figure out where I am in the world, who I want to be, that kind of thing. And then I was taking a religion class at the College of Santa Fe from Brother Mouton, one of my favorite professors. It was a class called Five Strange Books of the Bible. So we did Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Job, and Revelation. We never, once you get to Revelation, you can't find another strange book. So we only did four. And Brother Mouton was talking about, I don't even know the scripture reference, but we were in Revelation and he said, the kingdom of God is how we treat each other. Nobody, I went to church 3 days a week my whole childhood. Nobody had ever put it in those terms. And then if you look at the Lord's Prayer, the second line, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We're supposed to be bringing heaven right now to earth. Forget that afterlife stuff. We don't know what happens. I can't tell you what's going to happen when your body gives up and turns to dust. I can't tell you what's going to happen. I believe we go on. I don't know how. But right now, this is what is important.
Right.
Is loving your fellow man, taking care of your people in your community, and all that other stuff will happen if it's meant to happen. If it's not meant to happen, it's not going to happen.
So then how do guns, God, and guts come through these Southern Christians?
Oh, bless their hearts.
So we talked about the two Jesuses.
There's American Jesus.
With the abs.
Yeah, and the AK-47, yes. Or I don't Rambo. Even know gun stuff. So,
yeah.
And wearing camo and like, and forcing people to believe in him. And that's not how he rolled. That is not a historic biblical Jesus. And if you want to know the historic biblical Jesus, you got to read the red letters.
Oh.
And I think you can get a Bible that just has the red letters.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which is, that those are supposedly the words that Jesus spoke.
Yes. And there weren't that many.
No. No,
it would be a pamphlet.
Yeah.
You know.
It's pretty much, I'm going to tell you what it is. I have a little meme on my phone and it's got a little picture of Jesus. And then next to it, it just says, and it looks like one of those little Bibles you made in Sunday school with the pinking shears. You know, the friend. Okay. And it just says, don't be a jerk. It actually says something different, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. Just don't be mean to people. Love your neighbor. That's pretty much it.
Lil Queen Trash Mouth and Hot Diggity and I just took that trip across Texas.
To the homeland.
To the homeland. toward New Orleans. And we saw a lot of interesting billboards.
I believe it.
You know, and it's interesting to keep in mind that God didn't draw those billboards,
nope.
that they were bought and paid for by corporations and you know,
big religious movements. Yeah,
yeah, big religious movements. I don't even know if a lot of the people driving down the highway really believed what was on those billboards. I think it's there to impose on them.
Yeah. A lot of my work has been about, for lack of a better term, Jesus. Mm-hmm. I did a project called The Road to Damascus, and it was all based on roadside religious signs. And, like, if you have to beat people over the head, then you're not doing your job as a Christian. Because mm-hmm. really all it takes is, hey, man, how you doing today? Is there anything I can do to help you? Mm-hmm. Do you need a sandwich? Can I give you my coat? It's not that hard. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be these big, giant gestures of funding mission trips. It doesn't have to be that. It's how I treat you as my neighbor. Mm-hmm. And the billboards are interesting to me because I always found, I think what draws me to these kind of like fringe areas of life is the passion behind putting up a sign that says, repent. Mm-hmm. There's some passion there. Mm-hmm. I can't go put a sign up that says, repent. I don't have the passion to do that. Mm-hmm. But this person has this passion. We're going to put the repent signs, not just on one phone pole, but every phone pole along the interstate. Mm-hmm. I find something fascinating about that. And so I've always been interested in these kind of like, I don't want to use the word weird, but like not mainstream people, mm-hmm. especially in the religious world. Mm-hmm. I've met many people that most people wouldn't stop and talk to. Mm-hmm. I find them fascinating. And like this whole idea of Jesus being a part of my work is what kind of led me to my little film that I made. The introduction to that is all about my early work dealing with the roadside signs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. How'd you know that you first know that you wanted to travel and felt brave enough to do this?
Oh, I don't consider it brave, but I know some
to
people
go
do.
Off with strangers that you met on the internet. I mean, okay. All right, y'all, we're going to get a little woo-woo, and I'm just going to go ahead and drop my gotcha moment on you
Since we're here, I'm going to go ahead and drop it
because this is the segue I've been waiting for.
Okay. I'm glad I could give it to you.
Yeah, because I have to always talk about astrology a little bit.
Okay.
And I do want to say that maybe it's not brave because you and I share some astrological big three. So you're a Gemini,
yes.
Sag rising,
yes.
And what's your moon?
I have no idea. I have to ask my daughter.
Oh, look, we trash mouths. Draw me a text. The phone going ding, but I want to know what it is. Tell me again your mom's rising. I mean, our moon. See, I have a Gemini moon and a Sag rising.
Okay, yeah.
And a Taurus sun. And so I know that I look up and find myself in situations that I'm like, oh
yeah.
This might not necessarily be brave, but it's interesting.
Well, oh, no. That's
Gemini,
definitely.
Sun, and moon.
Oh, so there's my problem. Yeah.
Sag rising. And so we both share that, you know, my mom, who's probably listening right now, is always trying to yank me back off of a... running willy-nilly into something, but I'm like, wow, that looks cool, you know. And then, you know,
no,
here
it's
we are.
Just totally true. That I really resonate with. I'm not brave, but this is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That is definitely
this
I find myself
search
in
for
some
knowledge or
yeah.
something.
There was this guy in Texas that had the resurrection painted on the side of an 18-wheeler. Mm. And I actually got in the back of the truck with this man.
That's how you blessed. You know?
and then
what happened?
Well, he told me that he wanted to set it up to be an after-school program for kids.
No! Come in and look!
But this is exactly what he said. He said, but they wanted me to sign them pedophile papers. And I was like, what is a pedophile paper? And then I went, oh, you mean a background check?
Yeah.
I was like, well, yeah, I would want you to have a background check if I was going to let my kids get in the back of your 18-wheeler.
God. Hey, people are going crazy every day. I don't care what you did last week, your background check. What are you doing today? Now you just woke up because you can't afford toast. And so now
and now you're mad.
Now you're stealing kids and selling them on the black market. Everybody's got to hustle. I don't know what that background check is going to reveal.
The pedophile papers.
I know. It's wild.
It was crazy.
You know,
okay, what's so your gotcha on the astro
on this note. Did you know that in 1852, while it's Jeopardy,
I know, right?
And while on a steamboat in Mississippi, John Warren Revere, who's in the song,
who Joseph Warren.
Joseph Warren. We were talking about Joseph Warren, and discussed astrology with Stonewall Jackson.
What?
Yeah, who was a deep believer of the subject.
What?
And though Revere was skeptical, he provided Jackson with the necessary data for calculating a horoscope. And in the course of a few months, he received from him a letter, which he preserved, enclosing a scheme of Revere's nativity. Jackson predicted a, quote, culmination of the malign aspect, end quote, in the first days of May 1863. This would align with the Battle of Chancellorsville on May 3rd, 1863, the battle that led to Revere's court-martial.
Wow.
That was on Wikipedia.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's just so funny because we both went down our own rabbit holes, but I click on Civil War service.
Yeah.
And that's what I came up with. My little rabbit hole was like, what? He talked astrology with Stonewall Jackson, who cast his chart. And it's just funny because, you know, Lil' Queen Trashmouth and I were just talking the other day about celebrity astrologers and political astrologers.
I think you could count that one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been believing in this stuff forever, too. And they're shoving Christianity and what's devil worship down people's throats on the one aspect.
But it's okay if they do it.
Oh, yeah, because you got to do that to manipulate power. You know, and they're all divinely, you know,
inspired.
Descended from, you know, God in their own special way.
Another fun fact about Stonewall Jackson.
Hmm.
He was shot by his own men when he was returning to camp.
Hmm.
And they had to amputate his arm.
Hmm.
And the doctors threw it in a pile of arms because there were piles of arms and legs. And a priest pulled it out and took it with him, and they buried it along the way. So Stonewall Jackson's arm is buried away from his body in a separate place.
Wow.
In Virginia.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then he went on to die after the wound. But yeah. So you can go visit Stonewall Jackson's arm grave.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I have not been there yet.
You know what's funny? What that brings to me, and this is how, you know, I'm going to wrap this conversation because it's kind of going off the rails. But I really, when I one of my favorite movies, because I grew up queer in the 90s, and there wasn't a whole lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Still a very great movie, Fried Green Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember when they buried Buddy's arm?
No.
There,
I need to watch that again. It's been a long time since I saw that.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Very centered around Southern life.
Yes.
Right? And being queer, being anti-racist.
Yeah.
And being amongst Klansmen, you know. But Cecily Tyson, Kathy Bates, you know, you just.
I remember Mary that scene Stewart in the parking lot.
Which one?
With Kathy Bates.
Which scene?
That where she rams somebody
she rams
in the car.
Tawanda!
Tawanda!
Yeah. But in the beginning when they're telling Ruth and Iggy's origin story, Iggy's little brother, Buddy, got his arm severed.
Oh.
The train ran over his arm.
Wow.
But you just see, you know, sorry guys, spoiler, you see the kid playing by the train tracks, and then you see, you know, his foot gets stuck in the thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, we're all like, what's happening? And then you see the train coming and he can't get off. And then the next thing you know, they're panning everybody in black looking really somber. Oh, and then they pan Buddy. And, you know, you see this, he's probably like 9 years old and he's got his sleeve tucked in and he's wearing the little suspenders. And the tombstone says, "Here lies Buddy's arm."
Nice.
You know, but I wonder yeah. if, because that the grandma in that was very much, she was a daughter of the Confederacy.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about that in the movie.
Yeah,
she was having a meeting
DOC,
down there.
Yeah.
Listen, can you just say a little something about their role? Because I was confused growing up. You know, in D.C., they had the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Yeah, it's two different daughter things. Yeah.
Okay, so what?
Well, the Daughters of the Confederacy were kind of, they were first the Ladies Memorial Society, and mm-hmm. they were the ones that like made sure that veterans were taken care of, and that you know, they had everything they needed, and then it kind of morphed into building these monuments. And then they also were very responsible for rewriting the history and writing the Lost Cause myth.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't done a whole lot of investigation into that. I just kind of know the cursory things about them. I'm sure there's so much more to them, but they are still in existence today.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I attended in 2023 an erection of a monument.
Talk about that.
Oh my goodness. It was wild.
Last year.
And granted, it's on private property and paid for mm-hmm. with private funds. So I'm fine with that as far as if you want to play your little game, keep going. I don't mm-hmm. understand why
mm-hmm.
they want to keep that going, but mm-hmm. they do. And one of the ladies there that was the kind of she was the MC and kind of ran the whole dedication process. Pretty sure she was a cousin of mine somewhere because she had Cheatham in her name.
Mm.
And my grandpa on my mom's side from Florence is a Cheatham. Yeah, she's still in the Daughters of the Confederacy. She's a big active member of that. And
wow.
So their plan for this property in Alabama is to like maybe house some of the monuments that have been taken down.
Mm-hmm.
And erect new monuments
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to the Confederacy. Yeah, I said that out loud.
Okay.
It was a crazy experience. I mean, my husband and I didn't really talk to anybody, or we just kind of sat there and just did our thing. Mm-hmm. I took pictures. They had a Civil War reenactment before that. That was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a war that the Confederates won. So
mm-hmm.
Against, I can't remember the... Strait, General Strait, and it was Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was the father of the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first Grand Dragon, I believe, mm-hmm. of the KKK. So,
all right,
it's all a big spider web. That's all I can tell you is it's really weird spider web.
It is. Hmm.
And that's kind of an insult to spiders.
Well, they have great architectural
talents,
those spider webs,
mm-hmm.
and I enjoy storytelling and story weaving, and it's in telling our truths
yes.
that we can learn more about each other and learn how to get along together.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of trauma lenses and things like that,
yeah.
you know, we touched on how we each see the world through our own lens.
And we
do. For some people, that's based on a lot of trauma.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I view the world through a traumatic lens or a lens of trauma, but I think we all have our own things that we've experienced that we bring to the table. And I guess my thought process in doing this kind of work is if I can share with the world what I'm learning and encourage them in their learning journey or mm-hmm. unlearning journey,
mm-hmm.
then my work here is cool. You know, I might not be done yet. I don't think I'm done yet.
Oh no.
But
I love that.
Yeah.
And would you please say what you're hoping that your trip back east that's coming up? What are your intentions? Y'all are going to drive?
Well, it's probably, yeah. My son Jackson and I are driving. We're leaving on November 2nd, and I have to be in Boone, I think on the 6th, I think I need to be there. And so I'm not really doing work. It feels weird to go to the South and not find monuments.
You're going to take a picture of something.
I'm going to take a picture of something, I'm sure. But like my path in the years before was all wound around the monuments. Like mm-hmm. I would go to certain towns because they had a monument.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm not doing that. And so it feels a little weird. I feel like I've lost a friend.
Oh.
those crazy monuments.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jackson and I are doing that. We're going to make this a food trip because he's 19, so we can't make it a drinking trip.
Right.
And I'm going to give an artist talk on November 7th, 2 days after the election. Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting, driving through the South during the election cycle.
But my question, you know, we talked about that, and I'm like, what do y'all think is going to be the purge? Like, what are you worried about?
I don't know.
Is going to come run out. There's a Yankee, you know, I mean, it's a blue state person coming through. We're going to get
Honestly, whenever I travel in the South, I'm always a little concerned about my license plate.
Yeah.
Because people don't know New Mexico is a state. Mm-hmm.
And so it says USA.
It does, but I don't think they read that.
If they can't read nothing else, they can read those three letters. I say USA, okay.
But I have been mistaken as being from Mexico before. It's kind of funny.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be an uneventful trip. I mean, my main concern is driving into Western North Carolina, which has been hit hard by Helene.
Yes.
But my sources at Appalachia State University say my talk is still on.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it got canceled, though, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Now, you just talk real quick about your ties to that school
and
your project there.
So Marianne Redding is the curator of my show there at the Turchin Center for Visual Art. And Marianne was my department chair at Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Mm-hmm. And I told her in 2017, we had lunch one time, and I said, well, I'm going to do this project. She had already moved to North Carolina when we had lunch. I said, I'm going to do this project about the Confederate monuments. And she's like, well, I'm going to show it. And I hadn't even taken the first picture yet. Yes. So that's confidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you have that much confidence from your curator, that's a good sign you're doing the right thing. So. Yeah. And Marianne is just a lovely human. She and her husband, Roger, are great.
Awesome. So. And just real quick to plug just your other modes of business, you work with local artists and documenting their stories.
Yeah, that's kind of my main day job is I print for other photographers. So mm-hmm. I'm a printer, a digital printer. And then I really want to expand my business to documenting artists' stories, like getting your brand out there. Like your story is who you are. And that can be a really good tool for marketing your business. Mm-hmm. So
I've learned a lot just from reading your mission statement mm-hmm. and description of the project and everything. I'm like, man, I'm slipping. I definitely want to consult with you on my elevator pitch. I'm really good at
helping artists solve their digital quandaries. If you have trouble navigating the digital realm, just reach out.
Awesome. Anything else you want to leave folks with before we say good day?
No, I just, just be good to your neighbor. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard.
It's not that hard.
Mm-mm.
It's not that hard. All right, folks, y'all heard it. Wendy Young says it ain't that hard.
I mean, you have to not be a power hungry idiot.
Right. So there's that part. So the work that... I just really appreciate you being here, mm-hmm. and my goal is reconciliation mm-hmm. and truth and justice, all of those things that that this project brings to the forefront, and how we can get along as human beings and move forward. Okay, it doesn't matter if there's a ceasefire tomorrow or if we all do revenge killings until one last guy is left standing. We have to do the personal work that will allow us to be good humans to each other. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's great. And it is hard. And also it's natural.
Yeah.
To the drive to get along, I feel like.
We can get there.
We can get there. Mm-hmm. We can get there. Oof. Thanks for being
thanks
here.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Wendy's website, wendyyoung.net. Is there a song that you want to hear? Let's see.
What was the other one? I can't
remember. Wildfire.
Oh, let's do Wildfire.
You want to do Wildfire?
Yeah. So Wildfire is a great little song by Watch House.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a historic journey through from Joseph Warren to now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
And that's Joseph Warren, grandson of Paul Revere or son of Paul Revere?
No, I think he was a cousin of Paul Revere.
Oh, I gotta pull out my
check it out.
Is it the same guy, right?
Joseph? No, I think that's one of his descendants.
Ah, okay. Yes. Joseph Warren Revere was a grand.
Yeah, so he was named after Joseph Warren. Died in the Revolutionary War. He died at the Battle of Bunker Hill, I believe.
Ah,
but the song says hate should have died with Joseph Warren.
So how come everybody's naming everybody the same name?
Because
too?
I don't know.
I mean, like, how can I don't know. It's hard to keep track of history when everybody's got the same.
Change it up a little bit.
Because when we were talking about, this is the one that was doing astrology with
Stonewall Jackson. Jackson, yes.
That's this guy.
But he's a descendant of Joseph Warren. Okay. Joseph Warren, from what I read, he should have been George Washington, but he died at the Battle of Bunker Hill. He wasn't supposed to be fighting, but he did it anyway. So he's kind of a martyr for the American Revolution.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
But then his descendant goes on to do astrological charts with Stonewall Jackson.
and a whole bunch of other things. I found out about this guy through listening to the song Wildfire, and I thought I was following the Joseph Warren
song. He is Joseph Warren, but then I guess the Reveres got married down the line or something. Yeah. I don't know.
And that's how we get this whole, this whole idea of I'm blue-blooded American, even though I'm dirt poor and don't have nothing.
That Anglo-Saxon bloodline.
I got the bloodline. Mm-hmm. I got that blood.
Wildfire is a great song.
All right. Well, we're going to end with Wildfire. And everyone, you can catch this talk in its entirety on Mixcloud.com in the Cab Radio and in the Cab Radio at YouTube. And I'll send you links, Wendy.
Thank you.
And we'll follow.
All right.
And we'll see you guys when you get back. And hopefully you and Lil Queen Trash Mouth will come on and talk about the journey and what the atmosphere was like.
Yeah.
Now she's going to fly.
She's flying. Mm-hmm. She said she didn't want to drive through the South after the election. I was like, I don't blame you.
Man, I want to hear about the two different experiences.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because I imagine that she can have just as an extreme issue on the plane with the heightened alert of XYZ, or...
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see.